Hello and welcome to the special edition of Chat Lounge. I'm Xu Yawen in Beijing. The annual World Forum for Asia has been held on the tropical island of Hainan in southern China. The theme of this year's forum was Asia and the World, Common Challenges, Shared Responsibilities. The event welcomed approximately 5,000 participants, including diplomats, scholars, and business leaders. Discussions at the forum revolved around four major segments, covering the world economy, technological innovation, social development, and international cooperation. Initiated by over 20 Asian countries and Australia, the Boao Forum for Asia aims to promote economic integration and inject positive energy into regional and global development. So in this episode, we focus on the role of technology in bolstering regional economic growth and the opportunities and challenges it presents. Joining me today to discuss these topics are three distinguished guests. They are Manura Makhdoom, a journalist and editor of China Affairs with Daily Mail Pakistan, Amirul Sajjadi, a digital journalist with Malaysian National News Agency, and Jerry Gray, a UK-born Australia freelance writer and current affairs commentator. So first of all, Makhdoom, we know one of the trending topics during this year's Boao Forum for Asia is the rapid development of the generative AI, and it has revolutionarily changed many industries and fields worldwide, including our media industry. What's your take on AI's impact on the media industry?
All right. First of all, thank you for having me here. I think AI has really set the stage for remarkable change in all industries, like you said. In media, I think it's brought a lot of innovation. It has eased operations. Efficiency has been increased a lot. For example, you know, we can create more in terms of marketing. We can create more user-targeted ads. In journalism, you know, it really helps us with creating content. More creativity helps to really increase creativity and create more user-friendly, user-targeted content. So it's really, you know, it has really eliminated tedious tasks. You don't have to spend hours proofreading things. You don't need a whole team of proofreaders. So in terms of that, it has really increased efficiency. So I feel like it has really been a formidable force in terms of impact on the media industry.
Amirul, as a digital journalist, what changes has AI brought to your newsroom and the news production process?
Yeah, as we know, in the traditional news model, journalists need to complete a series of work as a interviewing, selecting topic, writing, and editing. So that's a lot of process that we need to be done. But and when the technology AI start to boom in many industries, including journalism, actually for me, AI really helped me to reduce the workload by helping craft a better story and verify faster and easier. For example, nowadays, people are prefer to watch than read. So other than writing an article, I need to prepare a video also. So by using the AI, it can tell me what kind of the content should I make to meet the algorithm of the audience interest itself. So that the video suggested by AI definitely gonna be a viral, and I can get the impact for my website. Like example, yeah.
For Jerry, I know you are a social media influencer, also a current affairs commentator, and you have produced many popular videos on YouTube. So how have you been using AI to improve effectiveness?
I'm going to be very different from your other guests because AI for me is a new trick and I'm an older dog. So I don't learn new tricks very well. I have experimented with AI, but I haven't ever used it. And there's two reasons for that. One is the fact that, I'll be honest, the technology scares me a little bit. It's a technology that really needs deeper investigation before we get into it. But the other thing for me is, most importantly, I do my own research. I don't have a team of editors or proofreaders or anything like that. It's just me as an operator. So when I create a video or create an article, that research is entirely 100% mine. And that way I can learn. And what I can do is I can selectively choose what I want rather than have AI choose it for me and give it to me. I can disregard things that I think are not appropriate. I can add things that are And basically, what I'm trying to avoid is a confirmation bias. I'm very much a pro-China commentator, and it'd be very easy to be biased in my selection, whereas when I'm looking for it myself, I find I can acknowledge things that are contrary to my own opinions and say, well, this is the fact, this is what people think, this is what people say, or this is what people do, as opposed to just going along with the flow of an AI-produced report. So for me, it's not a big factor, but I am very conscious that it can help me with things like editing. And I probably will move down that track shortly.
We have discussed how AI has impacted our media industry. And now let's shift gears to the impacts of AI on the economy. Amirul, so the Malaysian government launched the AI for People program this year to bridge digital literacy gap and make AI education available to everyone. So could you share with us more details about this initiative? And also, in which industries have you observed increased effectiveness and productivity?
Yeah, particularly the e-commerce players has been growing steadily. Based on the Bank Negara Malaysia, in 2023, Malaysia made around 11.5 billion online transactions. Compared to the last year, it's around 9.5 billion. It shown that Malaysians are adapting the e-commerce environment, especially through the social media platforms like TikTok Shop. Yeah, because currently, most of those sell on online platforms are SMEs. They are using this kind of the platform to generate information about what the people like, and then they can find the information of the product and sell to the public. So actually, based on what I'm saying, it's like most of the small shops currently in Malaysia, they are using virtual assistant, which is they are using a AI to be a customer service for them. So they can providing 24/7 customer support, addressing inquiries, and resolving some issues if they have something been sparked if for their businesses. Yeah.
Well, Jerry, in the case of Australia, I saw a report jointly released by Microsoft and the Tech Council of Australia says that the generative AI could contribute over $100 billion a year to Australia's economy by 2030. So how do you view the potential economic opportunity for Australia by using the AI?
The economic opportunities are incredible. There was a McKinsey report that acknowledges, that, unfortunately, that Australia is behind the trend. However, it has moved from a previous survey that they did 10 years ago, and it's improving because of the pandemic. So it's important that people are looking at the impacts of this because there will be a huge requirement in transitions from some trades into other trades. So, for example, transportation and logistics, as has already started in China, that could become pretty much automated. Drivers, packers, warehouses, and many delivery people would start losing jobs. So there's an impact. But this transition, according to the report, and it could affect as many as 1.3 million jobs. That's 5% of the population of Australia, not the working population, the entire population. So science and technology, which would benefit greatly from AI implementation and jobs in those fields. So especially things like healthcare and aged care, they would grow exponentially as the population ages and as medical diagnoses and treatments all improve through AI or through the adaptions of AI. And one of the impacts, we tend to see media and we worry about this threat in some fields, but in reality, the opposite is true. It's huge opportunities. Australia's UTS, University of Technology Sydney, has provided extensive reports on working, particularly with China, and as has the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and NextGov in the US. They've written papers on China's leading this, and it's not just in scientific publications, but it's with patents and inventions. So it's really all about whether or not, a lot of people are not going to like this, but in many respects, China is ahead of the field. USA is in second place. And I think what we're seeing here is a change. We have respectable institutions in Australia, the USA, and the UK making it clear that their positions, China, must not be left behind here. And I think working with China in this field is absolutely imperative. Rishi Sunak and Sunak acknowledged that in November last year. He went against the trend and invited China to the Bletchley Summit. So this isn't just Australia that would benefit from this kind of relationship, but every country in the world. One of the great points has been made here that it's not just in military, it's in every single aspect of our lives. So huge implications for Australia, Sino-Australian relations, and probably the rest of the world too, humanity in fact.
China's top diplomat Wang Yi had visited Australia, and also the two sides agreed to resume all-round dialogue and strengthen cooperation. So under that context, how do you think China and Australia could complement each other in the technology sector?
There are huge complementarities. The Chinese government and Australian government need to repair some relations that were damaged before the last election in the last government process. So that's starting to happen now. We've got many interactions with universities. The two countries have resolved their trade issues pretty much. There are always going to be little differences between us. But I think the opportunities now for Australia, in particular for Australia, because Australia is very much dependent, and they don't like to admit this, but it's true, almost 40% of Australia's entire economy is dependent on China. And Wang Yi's visit there was a great opportunity for them to reset that and help that along. And I think that's probably where the future lies. But we're going to see that in the next couple of weeks. We need to avoid the media speculation on the deteriorating relationship, because that is media. And we need to focus on what's happening in organizations like the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here in China. Their relationships are going much better than the media might have us believe.
Well, let me come to you, Mark Noor. We know Pakistan has established a few institutions, and one of them is the Sino-Pakistan Center for Artificial Intelligence, with the goal to provide solutions to things like smart cities, smart agriculture, and deepfakes, so on and so forth. What outcome have you seen so far, and how has AI helped to unleash Pakistan's economic development?
So these two institutions have really played a pivotal role in bringing innovation in Pakistan. It has really improved and digitalized the banking sector, for example. A lot of more people now use online banking, digital apps, online payment methods, which was unheard of until maybe 6-7 years ago. And you know, Pakistan is primarily an agricultural country. So China already had been helping Pakistan with some technology for agriculture and fertilization, things like that. But now with AI, there's a lot of water conservation programs, better yields, and all of that due to AI. And also, it's helped greatly in the finance and banking sector.
We have discussed how generative AI could empower each nation's economic development and bilateral cooperation. I want to hear your perspectives on how can regional cooperation be achieved through AI in sectors such as the electric vehicles or digital economy. We know these are also important topics at this year's World Forum for Asia. So Amirul, how about we start from you?
Yeah, sure. Okay, that's a good question. As we know, there's more than 100 Chinese companies that produce EV cars. For example, BYD, Wuling, NIO, NIO, and many more. But some people in the Asia-Pacific region are quite skeptical. If they are buying this EV car, how about the maintenance? Because it's not same as the petrol car. Because there are a lot of workshops that can be serviced if you're using a petrol car. But for the EV, we cannot simply send to the normal workshop. So in future, maybe any EV companies in China can collaborate, maybe from Malaysia or another region country, to collaborate with the education ministry to create a model through the initiative like technical and vocational education, so that the EV car will hit the roof, because there are no to worry. Because the maintaining of EV car, they have a local person that can do a MRO, like example, change the battery or something like that. So this is a good for the China EV market also. They can penetrate to another region of, especially in Southeast Asia.
Jerry, what's your take on that? I mean, how will AI-empowered electric vehicles enhance cooperation and even boost regional development?
I think it's inevitable that it's going to. Australia has, particularly talking about Australia in the region, has cooperated. China has just recently signed an agreement or started an agreement with NVIDIA, the chip maker. And that's a huge agreement. We're talking about automation and self-driving. So it means that more cars can be built easier through the automation systems that the chips that NVIDIA are supplying. Now, a lot of people are saying, first of all, that these chips can't be supplied because of the restrictions that America's placed on them. That's not true, because these are a lower level chip, which are acceptable to trade in. So there's no problem with that. NVIDIA is going to do very, very well from exporting these from America into China. China is going to do very well by installing these into their factories and automating their factories for new electric vehicles. And Australia is going to do very well because they are currently literally only 10% electrified vehicles. It's a very small amount which needs to increase. Now, the other thing that people don't think too much about is when China is building more cars or more ships or more anything, then Australia is making more money because a huge proportion of Australia's income comes from iron ore, which is shipped to Australia and then turned into steel, which is turned into cars and then shipped back to Australia and other places. So in terms of how regional this will be, I think BYD has moved into Thailand and also Indonesia to build factories. Tesla is talking about moving into Korea as well as the gigafactory that it has in Shanghai. I think it's an enormous boost. It just needs to have the regional cooperation that things like Boao Forum actually provide. It's a good meeting point to set in place procedures and strategies to implement all of these benefits.
We have been discussing the opportunities and bright future empowered by AI. In the meantime, let's take a look at the risks and the pricing challenges we're facing by using the technology. What are your guys' thoughts on some most pressing challenges that we're facing by using the generative AI or AI-related technology?
When we're talking about the risk, actually, the early of this month, there's some syndicate, scam syndicate, using our leaders' videos. They are edited using AI. So they've shown that the prime minister is discussing an investment scheme with the lucrative returns. So actually, this is a deep fake of the video. So this is. It can make the public itself feel like for those who don't understand the AI technology, they think the video itself is directly from our leaders. So this is really bad if we don't try to carry it out. We cannot let the AI is a good one, but if we not control it, that's going to be a really bad impact to society and also for nation itself.
Jerry, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think I look at this from a different perspective. Employment or the potential lack of it is a huge risk. And we have been here before. The Luddites were afraid of this in the 19th century when they destroyed textile machines that were taking away jobs from people. I was personally involved in the implementation of computing into my workplace in the mid-1980s. Many people then thought we'd be losing jobs right, left and center. So this is not a new fear. But nor is it unreasonable, as the McKinsey report states, we need to plan for it. But the other problem that I see with AI is what it can do. It can mass produce information, which if not managed, could be faked. It can create deep fakes, but China has already legislated against that. As far as I know, no other country has yet, but there are dangers with also selective algorithms. And a great example is in China back in, I think, 2020, when the industry was in its infancy, there were algorithms built into the food delivery drivers' phones that literally forced them into breaking laws to deliver food in unreasonable timeframes. So China needed to regulate that, and it did. And this is why it's important. One of the important things to acknowledge, China has the lead in regulations here. And by doing what they're doing, they've shown the world that it is possible to put guardrails around a potentially harmful product so that the usefulness can all be harnessed. I think that's the important thing to take away.
Mahnoor, Jerry just mentioned China is introducing the AI-related regulation. We know actually this month the country has released a draft law on AI and is focusing on creating a legal structure that benefits the rapid development of the technology. If passed, this legislation would complement the country's existent or more targeted AI regulations, for example, on deepfakes.
Yeah.
So you have been covering China-related fears. So what's your take on China's approach on AI's regulation?
I think it's an excellent initiative on China's part. Like Jerry said, China so far the only country that's managed to do that, to pass a legislation about controlling the AI. Like I said, accessibility of the AI is very important. It can lead, already it's been leading to so much misinformation and so much chaos all over the world. You see videos of politicians, of military leaders, and it creates a lot of misinformation and chaos in general. So I believe that kind of regulation and accessibility is really required in this age of AI.
What lessons do you think might China's approach to AI regulation offer to other nations?
I can't speak for many other nations, but for Pakistan, where I gave you an example previously of a deepfake being used in a positive way, I would, you know, also encourage that Pakistan also tries to implement these kind of laws to control deepfake, to counter, you know, misinformation that's been the bane of our existence for a very long time.
If we look at the AI governance in the region, last month, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations published a framework for AI governance. But experts said member states at different stages of digital development could pose a challenge. So Amirul, how do you understand the challenge here? And what measures can ASEAN member states try to apply to overcome this obstacle?
Yeah, actually, because not every country has infrastructure of the AI itself. So to make sure all these things is between the country, we need to sharing knowledge, especially Singapore and China itself. Those who are leading in the AI industry. So we can share, sharing the AI technology, policy development and regulator compliance so that this kind of the technology will be benefit to our region.
I see. Jerry, what's Australia's approach to AI regulation? And also, what are your thoughts on possibility of having a regional consensus in the region?
I think we will get a regional consensus, but unfortunately, and we have to be realistic about this, there are currently two camps at the moment. China, through events like the Boao Forum, inviting the world to participate, or at least inviting the regional world and some others to participate, are playing a different game. Some people view it differently. There's no need to feel a threat from another country if you're working closely with that country and you're developing in cooperation with that country. And this is what the University of Technology in Sydney, UTS in Australia, has suggested, working with China rather than working against China to create divisions. Regional stability is quite resilient. With the exception of Japan and Korea, all the regional players have experienced growth in their manufacturing, exports, their tourism, foreign direct investments. And again, this is contrary to reports in Western media, but it actually is true. So it's impossible to know, I think, where this is going to go, but it certainly looks like the region will work with China. There are over 2,000 international attendees from 60 countries, I heard, and it's clear then that regional cooperation is very much alive and well. And it's actually what Foreign Policy magazine has called the diplomacy season here in China. The several leaders are coming here. And I think even one EU leader from Holland is in China this week. So we sometimes read that China is quite isolated. It's clear that this is really just wishful thinking on the part of some people who would like it to be true. I think the answer is that regional cooperation is alive and well.
Well, as we're coming to the end of our panel discussion, I want to go back to the theme of this year's Boao Forum for Asia, which is Asia and the World, Common Challenges, Shared Responsibilities. So, Amirul, how do you understand the significance of holding the forum?
I went to the Boa Forum in 2019, and I can see that the previous one before the COVID, people, especially from the leaders from and specific Asia-Pacific leaders are coming, and they are discussing about a lot of things. What can I say? It's like the Boa Forum is like ASEAN version of Davos Forum. Yeah, because it's not only about policy making. It's including with the economic things. Yeah, so what can I say? It's like, so Boa Forum is a closing information gap between the countries. So the leaders and the academics and the civil societies are coming to share their expertise and everything. So we can develop this nation in the better way.
Jerry, how can we collectively address these challenges and shoulder responsibilities to pave the way for a shared future for mankind?
The great thing about Boao is it puts Hainan on the map every year. Hainan is a visa-free destination for citizens of, I think, 59 countries. And it makes it one of the most important places in China just for a few days. And it started back in 2001 with an effort between Australia and China, regional development going on there. 26 countries were in attendance, and it's grown. There are now 60 countries, I think, delegations from Europe, Africa, the Pacific Island. Clearly, it's an important event for humanity, and it's an excellent method of keeping the region and ultimately the world informed of what China is doing. As a result of the forum, who they are doing it with as well. So China's trade with some partners has reduced, that's true, but its overall trade, its regional trade, and its trade with many developing nations has increased. Now, that's a very important thing for humanity. It's a very difficult political and economic environment right now, so meetings such as this, Boao, are incredibly important. And I think that's where humanity will benefit. Much of humanity is involved in what China is trying to do.
Yeah, I think this forum every year, it paves a way to fostering more connectivity between all these countries, especially the Asia-Pacific countries. And, yes, world leaders get together, stakeholders get together, and they don't only just talk, they're not just forums and seminars. Those policies, those discussions, the global issues that are discussed, the solutions, the policies are actually implemented. Moreover, on the sidelines, experts of different fields, businessmen, journalists, they meet each other from different countries, exchange views, create a connection, then work on several projects together. So this is not something, China's doing in self-interest. It's a great evidence of that. It really does help other countries. China's helping other countries, strengthening their economy and, increasing trade, different avenues of cooperation. So it's a very excellent forum, in my opinion, to facilitate all of that.
Mm-hmm. During this year's forum, there's a report suggested that Asia's economy is expected to grow by around 4.5% in 2024, surpassing last year, and continue to be the most significant contributor to global economic growth. How optimistic are you guys about the region's economy?
China already, passed its mark for last year. So I'm quite optimistic that, it has full capability to do it again this year.
How about you, Jerry?
I'm along the same lines. China is doing what it can to bring up China. I see a lot of Bloomberg and those kinds of reports that say China's overall trade is down. It's not actually true. It's trade with Europe. It's trade with America. It's trade with one or two countries is down. But overall, and it was highlighted just a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, that the first 2 months of this year were better than the first 2 months of last year in terms of overall trade. I think it was an 8% growth in total with imports and exports. And most of that trade is going to what used to be called the global south or the developing nations. And I think that's probably the important factor. China is not saying, let's ignore these countries, let's exploit these countries, let's colonize or take over these countries. China is just saying, well, let's deal with these countries, and those countries are getting benefit. We're looking at a very different, I described this in an article I wrote recently as a complete change in the history of the world, basically started in the last couple of years with the global south now developing. And I think that is the future. That's where we're going. We're seeing declining nations in Europe. We're seeing stagnation in some countries. and we're seeing growth throughout this region. And Australia is part of it too. China is leading it. And without China's leadership on this, then it probably wouldn't happen, but it is happening right now. We're watching it in real time.
China continues to remain an important factor in fostering the regional economic development. Amiral, what are your prospects for the economic development in the region? How does a better integrated Asia's economy mean to the global economic recovery?
Yeah, because as we know, the Asian is mostly they are supporting each other, right? So like China says, they are support the region economy. So what can I say? It's like, based on what I'm seeing, it's like China definitely will help each other, the region countries, through the OBO, One Belt, One Road initiative. So they will be strengthened more. So this will going to be benefit to the region itself. Yeah.
And with that, we're wrapping up this special edition of Chat Lounge. Many thanks to our panelists for sharing your valuable insights with us. Manura Makhdoo, a journalist and editor of China Affairs with Daily Mail Pakistan. Amiral Sajjadi, a digital journalist with Malaysian National News Agency. And Jerry Gray, Australian freelance writer and current affairs commentator. I'm Xu Yawen in Beijing. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.